Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking home improvement on the show today. We'll start by focusing a bit on roofing. I want to zero a little on, and so does John, on covering metal roofs and gutter repair. John Freiberger is our guest. John, been with us for 14 years, I think, now. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector and more than four decades of home improvement experience. So as we talk with John, I hope you'll join in. What type of roof do you have? Have you been considering re-roofing your home, maybe switching to a different type of roof? What other home improvement questions are on your mind? Love to hear from you. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. John Freiberger, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
I'm glad to be back, Larry.
You know, there are many types of roofs. We've got shingles, you got slate, you got tile, you got copper and metal. Let's talk about metal roofing to start with. What are the pros and cons?
Well, it depends a little bit upon the type of metal roof you choose, because there are many different types of metal roofs out there now. One of the most recent ones, Larry, is actually it's a metal shingle. But on your roof, it looks like an asphalt shingle because it has granules glued to it instead of paint. So it's incredibly strong, 50-year-plus life, but it doesn't change the appearance of your house all that much. Some people don't like the look of shiny painted metal on their roof. They want something traditional. And this is something you can use on, let's say you own a very traditional Cape Cod in a historic neighborhood, local community committees don't want you to put bright red shingles on it. Well, this is something that will work. It is a metal shingle. It's going to last a very long time. It has tremendous wind resistance, but it has a very traditional look to it.
So, and it works well then?
The ones I have seen, no failures with it. It is very unusual to find a failure in a correctly installed metal roof. Now, there are cheap metal roofs. I mean, mobile homes have these rolled aluminum roofs. Well, I mean, that's a metal roof, but we're not talking about mobile homes. We're talking about, talking about a house. But we do occasionally see what I consider to be sort of an agricultural product put on a house. And for a cottage, maybe that's fine. For a house in Madison or Green Bay or some other place, maybe it isn't, because what it is it has surface fasteners. So basically, you're putting on a roof, Larry, with a lot of holes in it, right? And you're putting screws through those holes, hopefully into the trusses or into the sheathing. And what you have on the screw is you have a gasket. So if you overset the screw, it breaks the gasket. If you underset the gasket isn't right. And after the sun hits the gasket for 10 or 15 years, the gasket falls off the roof. So basically, you put a roof on that is quite inexpensive compared to standing seam metal roofs, which is the one with the hidden fasteners. But you really get to the point where you have to start doing maintenance. I have a metal roof on one of my barns, and I had eight Amish gentlemen there for a day replacing all of the screws. And it was expensive. But I didn't want the leaks, because obviously if you have a leak around a screw and it's going into the sheathing or the trusses or the rafters, if the water gets in there, we're suddenly going to have wood rot in our structure. So I think people need to avoid the inexpensive metal and go with the better metal. So the long sheets we call standing seam, and they have hidden fasteners, which is great. They will last a good 50 years. There are many different types of coatings. Kynar is a patented paint system that seems to work. It's like automotive enamel, I think, is probably the closest. Maybe it is automotive enamel, but it lasts a very long time. About the only thing that is really going to damage a good quality metal roof is going to be really large hail, because the wind resistance is better than plain old asphalt shingles. And light hail is not going to damage it, but very heavy hail is going to end up dinging it.
I had asphalt shingles on my home on Lake Monona, and we had a storm, a big windstorm, and there was some wind and hail, and I had to actually the insurance covered replacing the roof, which was nice, the shingles, but...
Indeed, and hail and big storms with climate change, as we all know, we are getting more storms, we're getting more wind, and we are getting more hail in the Midwest than our grandparents saw.
So are the old, those old asphalt, roof materials, are they still okay, good? If they're installed right, I suppose.
Right. That's always a caveat, if installed right. But Owens Corning, CertainTeed, GAF have some fairly amazing asphalt roofs out there. Now, there's a big difference between the El Cheapo shingle you pick up at the big box store.
Yeah.
That might only last 15 years. But you can get shingles now that have 50-year warranties on them. And they call them lifetime. They really expect them to be 50 years. Because the laminated shingle has so many layers. It's similar to an old-fashioned built-up roof, which is tar, felt, and then gravel on the top, is that you have multiple layers of redundancy. So you've got a really pretty thick shingle, and yet not terribly overweight. It's not like you have to reinforce your roof if you're going to put on clay tile or slate or something like that. So I feel that that asphalt shingles are going to be around for a very long time, I think.
We had a caller, and we actually lost that caller, but she had incorrectly installed shingles, and that without knowing the whole story, led to problems. But what happens if they're incorrectly installed? What kind of recourse does a person have?
Well, the problem is that your recourse is generally with the installer. It's not the manufacturer, because all of the manufacturers have installation instructions, and they're usually right on the packages. If it's not on the package, let's say, Larry, you're reshingling your house, and you got a bid from Jones Construction, and you don't know these guys, but you want GAF shingles or CertainTeed. So you go to the website, and you download GAF Timberline Ultra 45s. Well, as I always say, print out the instructions and hand them to the roofer in case they've never seen them before. And then observe a little bit. He can be on the ground and see if they are putting the nails in the correct place, if the nails are being correctly set. One of the problems we see is high nails and low nails. So we see nails that actually break through the shingle. Mm-hmm. We also see nails that are high so that the shingle that sets on top of that, the exposed tab of the next course up, doesn't lay down right. So then the glue strip doesn't melt in the heat the way it's supposed to, and we get this, we call it a dimple or a fish mouth, and we have something where wind and water can possibly get under it. So I would say that the quality of shingles in the United States right now is extremely good. The installation of shingles in the U.S.
Not so good.
Not so good. Anyone can buy a hammer and a ladder, and the next day they're a roofer.
Yeah. Not good. Well, we've got slate, we've got tile, copper. Those are the other ones that I guess a person will, and many people, I guess, look at.
Yes, we have some newer things now for low pitch or flat roofs. Like in the old days, it was the built-up roof, the layers of felt and tar. Then it became the elastomeric membranes, EPDM, which... had to be put on really correctly and had some weaknesses. Now we have some thermoplastics, and some of them are welded in place, some of them are glued in place, but they are extending the life of what we used to have in flat roofs by 20% to 25%. And we will occasionally see some interesting houses, maybe a modernist house with a 312 pitch, and it has an old-fashioned built-up roof on it with gravel and gravel stop on the roof to reflect the sunlight. Mm-hmm. And those roofs I have seen go 60 years if they're really put on in the correct manner. So lots of different options out there, confusing number of options out there for people.
John Freiberger, our guest. Questions for him, give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Talking roofs, but we can also take other questions as well. I think John in Mount Horeb has a different kind of question. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the roof topic. I want to install some cabinets in my basement, and I think I should put vinyl tile under them, but what should I do to the wall behind them, the concrete wall? Can I just leave it? Should I paint it? Or do I have to put up furring strips and drywall?
Well, that's a tough question. I don't know. Are you on top of a hill? Are you in a low spot? How much moisture you have in the basement?
We're on high ground, and we have not had water in our basement in the past 20 years.
Yeah. Your dehumidifier run a lot or not?
We don't need a dehumidifier.
Oh, well, you are indeed a lucky person. Well,
the house has a sump pit, but there's never, like, the builder, he insisted on putting it in, and it doesn't have water in it. So we're fortunate so far. It's very gravelly, sandy, you know. It's southwest Dane County, the Driftless area. So,
That sounds absolutely great. Putting cabinets on a concrete wall is just plain difficult. The problem is, how do you anchor them? Well, you've got to drill into the concrete, and then you've got to put in anchors. And unless you're really good at putting in anchors, that's a little worrisome. I think the path of least resistance may be just a plain old frame up a wall and put drywall or paneling or something else on it, and then mount the cabinets to the wood, because it's just going to be a lot simpler than battling with concrete anchors, I think, especially if you're going to mount them yourself.
Yeah. These are going to be on the floor.
Oh, they're just sitting on the floor. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I think your idea of putting vinyl flooring underneath them is indeed a good idea, because your vinyl flooring is going to act as a vapor barrier. So it's going to retard vapor coming out of the floor that might cause some mold or mildew on the bottom of the cabinets. And you could probably trim that so it is only underneath the cabinets. But I think that's a very good idea.
Yeah. Go ahead, John. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Jeff and Mercer, your turn. Hi, Jeff. Jeff, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm pulling over because I am out in the countryside here, and you just cut off for the first time, and I hope that doesn't happen again. So hello, John. Hello, Larry. I'm calling up north here. The project has been my brother's trailer. We've been cutting it into pieces and removing it as we build a beautiful 2,000-square-foot home over and around it, but he's had to live in it while we're doing it, so it's taken us a lot longer to do. We're moving along pretty good. I did a couple of days worth of stapling insulation up above. The last couple of days, we put in a deck outside so we can build outside walls so we can cut out the last part of the trailer. But the question is, we just pulled out a 50-year-old trailer furnace the other day, and it's been getting into the 40s already up here at night. And so my brother is getting pretty chilly with his bed in the living room while we tear walls down and rebuild walls. But can you, John, recommend any furnaces that he's kind of low income? Maybe there's a program that helps with furnaces, or what size furnace would you recommend for a 2,000 square foot insulated home?
Yeah, good question, Jeff. The question is how well insulated you are, and certainly when you are in northern Wisconsin, an investment in very good insulation is going to help a lot. Unfortunately, spray foam insulation, which I think really is the best because it really air seals very well, is a bit on the expensive side, so I don't know whether he can afford that or not. But insulate as heavily as you can, and then your HVAC contractor is going to do a heat loss analysis so that we can figure out exactly how many BTUs you're going to need at 25 below zero, I think is still the standard. Now, there's a couple different ways of going. If you're up there on LP, LP is very expensive. If you're on natural gas is not nearly as expensive. But then the question is, can we get away with a modern heat pump system, which is actually good now to 15 below zero? As far as trying to get some help with all of this, I would call whoever your local electric and or gas utility is, because usually there's somebody there who knows something about assistance for people who may need assistance for one reason or other. And they may also have advice as to what sort of rebates or other things may be available on various pieces of equipment. That's information that I usually don't have. Sometimes your HVAC contractor does. But I would start with the utility. If the utility is a very small local utility, a co-op or something, they may not know, in which case I would talk to whomever your neighbors say is the best HVAC contractor and ask them the same question. What help is there and how can I be very efficient? Because let's put the money in now and keep you and your brother's monthly utility costs just as low as possible.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Jeff?
Makes sense.
Yeah, good. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Suzanne in Whitefish, we'll go to you next. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes. My issue are several. The most immediate one is I had some siding put up on my house, and the workers put the siding up incorrectly. So they have this siding, cement board siding, and when they put the shingles on the second floor, they did wrap the whole house with DuPont Tyvek. But when they put the shingles on the second floor, they did it incorrectly. They admitted it. They need to redo it. My concern is two. Number one, how long can DuPont Tyvek remain exposed to the elements while they reorder the supplies, the new tiles, so they can put it up properly? That's one concern.
Mm-hmm.
The second concern is when they take off these incorrectly installed cement siding shingles, they're little shingles
mm-hmm.
on the second floor, well, there will be holes in the Tyvek.
Right.
And I want to know if I need to request them to rewrap with new Tyvek without extra holes in it, or what are your thoughts on that?
If you go to the DuPont website, I believe it's going to tell you that if Tyvek is exposed for more than 6 months, it needs to be replaced. Personally, I would say it's more like 3 months. You are completely correct as far as the number of holes. That Tyvek is no longer competent. So Okay. We need to rewrap. Now, one possibility, and they're probably going to ask to charge you a little extra for it, is if this were my house, I would leave the Tyvek in place more or less as a wind barrier, and I would put old-fashioned tar paper up over the Tyvek. The nice thing about Tyvek is that it's a good wind seal. The bad thing about Tyvek is we are finding that where we do have holes and if any water gets in, the Tyvek tends to deteriorate, and then it will let in water. Tar paper has been around since about the Civil War, and I believe it's still the best membrane out there, though it's very difficult to tightly secure it around windows, which is what Tyvek's good at. But if you put up a layer of Tyvek and then put a layer of tar paper over the top of that, the tar paper controlling water and the Tyvek controlling wind, you have really what we call in engineering belt and suspenders.
There you go.
Right. Now, they're going to say, hey, Suzanne, it's a pain to put up tar paper. And you say, well, tell me how much more it's going to cost, because otherwise you could tear off all this Tyvek and you've got to completely redo it. And they may say, you know, give me a couple $100 and we'll put up the tar paper. So negotiate with them a little bit. But one way or the other, you are completely correct. That Tyvek is no longer competent and no longer meets manufacturer standards.
There you go. You got a little work ahead of you there, Suzanne, and I hope it all works out for you. It's good to know that at least in this case, the contractor admits mistake and is going ahead and redoing. That's great news. Let's take another call. Ann in Brule, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have had on a house that I own finish roofing, and I don't recall the name of it. It was a while back. Supposedly 75-year guarantee, who knows? But right now it's not in bad shape, and it's been on for 40 years. My concern is the gentleman who shovels my roof has seen some nails, you know, pop up, and he's kind of fixed them. And I just wonder when the time comes to replace it, I'm not sure where to go and how to find somebody who could replace it. I wondered if he was even familiar with this type of roofing, and it's corrugated.
Corrugated roofing.
Is it a metal-based roofing?
It is. What I was told is it's a plasticized metal, and it's mm-hmm. Finnish, supposedly from Finland.
Okay.
And this was up in the northern area where it had come out. It was a new product, and mm-hmm. I thought, oh, that sounds good, and I went with it.
And I think that is very similar to the product we're now seeing made in the U.S., which is the – Larry and I talked about during the intro to the show – which was a metal shingle that basically has adhered granules on it rather than paint. The granules, the nice thing about the granules is you can use a lighter color to reflect the sunlight if you want to keep the place cool. It is going to be protecting the metal underneath, and again, it's a sort of shingle that we are expecting to go at least 50 years. So if you have to replace this Finnish roofing, and it is possible that what's happening is you're getting small leaks around the nail penetrations, and that the reason the nails are becoming loose is that the wood, you've got very minor, very localized wood decay underneath. So I would go online and take a look at metal shingles with adhered granules, and I think you're going to see what back then was called Finnish roofing.
Okay. And then in terms of getting somebody, she's in Brule, which is far north. In terms of getting somebody to install it.
Well, they aren't any more difficult to install than any other shingle, Larry.
Okay.
I mean, basically you're nailing them into place. Sometimes there's fewer fasteners, actually. In fact, there's some metal shingles that are interlocks where there's only a single fastener per shingle.
Oh.
So sometimes it's actually a little bit easier. As we talked before the program, anyone who's using metal shingles, we need to make sure that our roof is straight. It's very hard to put a metal rectangular shingle on a roof that's got a big curve because the roof is sagging. So, you know, Anne would do well to, you know, hopefully her house was very well built and the snow loads in Brule have not moved anything. But whenever we use steel or copper or aluminum, any kind of metal, we want to make sure that our roofs don't have a lot of curves and sags to them.
Or you're getting into some problems. Okay. And good luck. Appreciate your call. And I guess whoever she gets, you get to take your advice and get from online a set of instructions on how to properly install.
Exactly.
From the manufacturer, hand it over to the roofer and say, follow this.
Right.
There you go. Mike in Winona, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for the program today.
Sure thing.
My question is I'm aware of two different homes. My home and my mother's home have received hail damage in the last year. We were not aware of the hail damage, actually, on either home. We had a roofing contractor come to my home. And then one also came to my mother's home proactively. We did not call them. And they told us about the hail damage in the area and asked to go up on our roof and inspect it. And they did find hail damage on both homes. And what they are suggesting is that we reach out to our insurance company and have them come out to do an inspection of the roof, but also have that roofing company there at the same time. And they will work directly with the insurer, and they're saying you're probably entitled to a full roof replacement. We'll just handle everything, and you'll probably just pay the deductible. What are your thoughts on just going with that roofing company that just stopped out at your house? Are there downfalls to that?
Is this a local company?
Yes. They're fairly, I would say they're local. They appear to be local.
Okay, they're not storm chasers out of Kansas.
No, they did have locations close to those homes or within 30 miles.
Okay. Okay. It sounds it's so they may indeed be legitimate. Well, your insurance agent up in Winona, Mike, is probably going to know a lot of local roofers. And I think I would start with the insurance agent and just say, look, we've got somebody who's come and identified damage. Here's their name. What do you think of these guys? And your agent may have an opinion, and you're going to want to talk to them anyway because your agent's going to need to come and inspect. So I think I would start there. I'm always very concerned when people show up after storms because storm chasers are notorious. A lot of them come out, I believe it's Kansas, because Kansas has a bankruptcy law where basically they declare bankruptcy every year. And so you have no recourse whatsoever. So it's, you know, it's Smith Roofing 1 year, Smith Brothers Roofing the next year, Smith and Daughter the next year. And they're doing the same shabby work and then getting out of it by declaring bankruptcy as an LLC each year. So I always approach roofers very, very carefully. I would assume that if you ask them for a list of referrals in your area, you'll actually be able to check on those referrals by calling or emailing people. So be very careful, but you may indeed be entitled to a new roof.
Yeah, why not? Mike, good luck. Appreciate the call. Talking with John Freiberger today, Wisconsin registered home inspector with more than four decades of home improvement experience. Great to have him with us. Clara Neipert, by the way, is our producer, our on-air producer, Jill Nadeau, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today, we've zeroed a bit on roofing, but taking all kinds of other questions as well with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. And lots of callers online, so we'll go to Katie in Fond du Lac next. Hi, Katie.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hello. Thank you for this opportunity.
Sure thing.
This is off topic, but important to me. I live in a lovely 93-year-old Dutch colonial with plaster and lath interior, but sadly, it has the original wiring, and I'm concerned about it. And is there any way I can rewire the home without tearing the walls apart?
Absolutely. I don't know about Fond du Lac, but here in Madison, there are electricians who really specialize in removing what is probably knob and tube wiring. Now, are you sure you have knob and tube, the old porcelain knobs, porcelain tubes, and sort of like tar paper
wire? Mm-hmm.
That is what you do have. Okay. So I think what you need to do is you need to talk to electricians. There are various tricks that I've seen used. One is, if you've got a nice Dutch colonial, you've probably got like 6-inch baseboards in the rooms. Well, you pull the baseboard off, and you've got a place to run wires around the room and then go up into the existing boxes. The attic is very useful for getting down into walls and doing ceiling fixtures on the second floor. The basement is very useful for coming up through the ring joists and the center walls to get things in. The hard part is always the ceiling light fixtures, because there's no way to get there without cutting a hole. So, but all you need usually is like 10-inch by 10-inch, or maybe they'd cut, you know, 8 to 16, so they're going to the joist or something. And then you need a good painter who knows how to mix up a little bit of plaster or even drywall compound, put some wood lath back in and match it all in. So it is certainly very doable. I've spent 30-some years doing historic houses in Madison, and so many of those were knob and tube. And we preserved 98% of original fabric when it was done. You just need somebody who's done it before and is fairly smart about it.
Good luck, Katie. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Gary in Reedsfield, we'll go to you next. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Hey, I got two questions. So I was listening about the Tyvek and the lady with the siding question.
Yeah.
Well, I have to get my house re-sided because we had a bad hailstorm here. But I have styrofoam on the outside of my house, 1/2 inch.
Yes.
So that should probably reseal itself, shouldn't it? I mean, it could probably even go in the same nails because I'm not replacing none of the starter strip or anything else like that.
Well, the problem The problem with foam, now foam, if you look at the Uniform Building Code, low perm foam, water-resistant foam, which is the extruded, not the expanded foam, not the white stuff, the beadboard, is a weather-resistant barrier. As long as all the joints are taped and as long as it's sealed at all of the penetrations, the windows and doors. The question we get into with older foam is how well the tape is going to stick. And I've had a lot of older houses where, as we've taken some siding off, the tape literally fell off the house. So I think that since we already have sort of a weather-resistant barrier with the foam, I would retape the foam. And then I'd put a layer of Tyvek over the top of the foam so you have a double weather-resistant barrier. And when you get to the doors and windows, you can seal it with the Tyvek tape. Be sure to go to DuPont and download the 5- or 7-page Tyvek installation instruction. But build in some redundancy, because if you're going to be putting good quality cementous siding on there, that siding is probably going to be on there for 40 or 50 years. So let's keep out the weather, both the water and the wind, so we can keep your utility bills down and keep further maintenance down. It is going to cost you a little more, but redundancy is a wonderful thing in houses.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary, good luck. Appreciate your call. Rick in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Thanks for doing this. I always get a lot out of it. I have a Cream City brick building, 1897, with a quote-unquote flat roof.
Yeah.
And there's a it has an EPDM cover, and there's a dip. You know, of course, it's angled towards the back, towards one side.
Sure.
So the water runs off, but it doesn't run off. It gathers in a little dip.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it re-roofed about 15 years ago. The guy did a good job, but he was – I didn't really understand – I don't understand the construction elements of this, but he said it would be very difficult to rebuild – you would have to rebuild it up to get the dip out of the roof. So there it is, gathering water. He said, well, it's a lot of weight, so I go up and squeegee it off when it rains. It's a royal pain, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking with 15 years on it, and I have had to patch it a few times, I'm thinking looking at a new roof, you know, fairly soon, 5-10 years, something like that. And I want to address this issue and take care of it, you know, pretty much forever. So
right.
I'm wondering how you do that. And then also what I'd like to do is, I know it's going to cost an arm and a leg, but just go ahead and spring for something, some kind of covering that where we can use the roof. You know, the EPDM topping is really filthy and, you know, we can go up there and walk around, but it's just not really pleasant to be up there. So I'm thinking something like floating deck or rooftop garden.
Mm-hmm.
When I mentioned rooftop garden to the roofer, he said, "Well, that's a lot of weight on the on the roof." And so, what goes into that? How possible or reasonable is that? How much work would I have to reframe the under the roof?
You might have to. What you're going to have to take a look at is the framing. So you're going to have an engineer, somebody who can actually analyze the framing. And what they will do is they will run a computer program. And you're going to be looking at a flat roof. Generally, I would probably be looking at 35 pounds per square foot is what I put in the computer. But if you're going to start accessing the roof and putting things on top, then you're looking at 55 pounds per square foot. So that's a big difference. So I think you're going to need to analyze that first. You may find that you're just not going to access the roof because it's going to cost way too much to do all of this framing or other support. You know, obviously, you can put in post and beam systems so that you pick up you shorten the spans of the existing rafters and things. So there's a lot of different ways of doing it, but you're probably going to have to talk to an architect or a consulting engineer to figure that out. Certainly, the thermoplastic roofs are very nice. Any roof needs to be protected. There's no roof that I know of that is made to be walked on where it is simply the roof. So, yes, you can put something on top of it. With roofing material, you do not want to use treated lumber because the chemicals in the treated lumber will damage the roofing. But there are things called, it's a company, it used to be called Dodge Rugapole, but if you Google PlayGuard, I think all one word, it is a recycled rubber developed for playgrounds. It snaps together, and it's very walkable, very soft, and it drains very well. So I think you're going to have to really do some thinking and some studying before you invest in the roof. If you decide just to leave it alone, I believe Milwaukee Insulation still makes tapered insulation systems to put on top of roofs. And if that ceiling is your thermal barrier, what they can do for you is start with insulation that's maybe 6 inches thick and goes down to 1 inch at the edge, so it adds pitch to your roof, so that dip will still be a dip, but it'll be a drainable dip. So you may want to investigate that as well.
Thinking about the weight when he mentioned gardening, because I remember a soil scientist on the show with me talking about the weight of soil, and he said if you take your bathtub and fill it up with soil, that's going to be about 1 ton. And so it gives you kind of an idea of the amount of weight that goes.
Well, it certainly does, Larry. And in the old days, you know, when Rick's building was built in 1897, they weren't worried about snow load.
No.
The building was heated and the snow melted off in a few hours, and it was no big problem. Mm-hmm. So you could frame these things up at 15 pounds per foot, and they stayed for a long time. But now when we start insulating and we have snow sitting for days, every time we have a really big snowstorm, about every 5 years, about 3 days after that, we have flat roof collapses. And for some reason, it's called durational loading. Everything weakens over time and bends, and all of a sudden down things come. So one wants to approach flat roofs in old buildings. And I guess the other thing we could mention to Rick is, I don't know whether his building is of any historic value, but if it isn't of historic value or is in a historic neighborhood, he may have access to federal historic tax credits plus possibly state tax credits as well. So anyone who has an old building that might have some value, it is probably worth talking to a tax credit consultant, because certainly the sort of thing like reframing, putting on a new roof are the sorts of things for which you can get the tax credits.
Hmm. There you go, Rick. Maybe you can save some money that way. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. John Freiberger, our guest today as we talk home improvement. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today, we've zeroed a bit on roofing, but taking all kinds of other questions as well with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in, and we're going to right back to the phones. We've got Toby in Oconomowoc with a question, so let's go there. Toby, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you, Larry, and thank you for the show that you produce here. It's always very helpful. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. So you've had some hail damage, I understand?
Yes. We live in Oconomowoc, and we were on the path of that hailstorm that occurred on June the 10th. And so many of our neighbors, in fact, most of our neighbors, are having their roofs replaced. So when we inquired with our insurance company, the adjuster came out, and his conclusion was that our roof had hardened to the point, because of its age, that it did not sustain any noticeable damage. And I was curious as to whether or not that is a common conclusion for shingles that might be 15 to 20 years old?
Well, the answer is a definite maybe. I think it probably behooves you to do a little checking on your own. Now, the first check is really easy. Look at your downspouts where they drain onto the yard. Are there a lot of granules in there? Because if the hail has knocked a lot of granules loose, they're going to come down the roof into the gutters, and they're going to come out the downspouts. The second thing to do is to simply look yourself. The easiest place to find hail damage is at the end of a shingle tab, because when the hailstone hits the center of a tab, you've got that whole area of impact to be absorbed by the shingle. But when it hits the edge of a tab, where the tab is, you're putting the same amount of pressure on half of the area. So you may find that there's maybe some little dents here and there, but then you look at the edge of the tabs, and there's a bunch of half moons where we've broken off the granules. So I would probably do that inspection. If you could do it yourself, that'd be great. Otherwise, you're going to have to get a handyman or a home inspector. You can always call a home inspector in Econo-Lok, and they'd be happy to put a ladder up and clamber about the roof. But it's probably worth getting a second opinion because who knows?
Yeah, be worth it, Toby. Give it a shot. Thank you for calling. Angie in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Angie.
Oh, good morning, and I'm very happy to be speaking with both of you. I've been a advocate of alternative energy for decades and have wondered for equally long about the impact of solar panel installations on roofs and wondered if the installation wouldn't also introduce holes in the roof that eventually would allow for water or snow or whatever to seep in and do damage over time.
There are systems for putting panels on roofs that really minimize the number of penetrations. And you may have it almost looks like rafters on top of your roof, I guess. You've got a long piece of metal that is running down the roof, and that might only have 2, 3, or 4 roof penetrations. And those can be made quite carefully gasketed and cemented. So it's not like we're making a hole in the roof, every foot or so. And then it may be 6 feet to the next one. So I think as long as our panels are installed by a good professional, obviously, we've got a penetration, and a penetration is a penetration. It can fail, but the likelihood of that is probably very heavily offset by the value of the solar, solar energy that you're getting. But like in everything else, having a competent professional do it is really what we want to encourage. Does that help, Angie?
Yeah, I hope so. And just to go along with that, Vern, relating question here, he wondered, this is Vern from Harvard, what's the best type of roofing to use for a roof that will have solar installed on it if you're putting a new roof on?
Well, part of that depends upon the pitch of the roof. And when we have flat roofs or low pitch roofs, we're looking, I think, at this point at thermoplastics. I think for some reason that asphalt shingles are still a little bit more forgiving than metal. And part of it is that metal, I mean, the wonderful thing about metal is things don't want to stick to it. So this is why when you see a high-pitched roof, we often see snow guards to catch the snow because everything slides off the roof. Well, when we try to patch metal roofs, there are sealants that in theory work, but I'd be a little bit cautious. So I would think that what we would want is a very good quality shingle with a very good quality underlayment that gives us a certain amount of redundancy.
Noah in New Glarus, I think, may have a similar question to ask. Noah, hello.
I do. It seems to be the theme of the moment. We're in the process of approaching a roof replacement and are seriously considering photovoltaic. And I'm just wondering if there are any steps beforehand to consider to make access easier in the long run and just any considerations that might not be typically thought of.
Well, I think if you're really thinking about photovoltaic, let's talk to the contractor who's going to install it and have them come up with a roof plan. And then where we're going to have penetration, like a penetration for a wire or something, we can actually put an engineered penetration on the roof rather than make a hole in the roof and caulk around it. So I would think having the roofer and the solar installer actually meet so that we have a coordinated installation so that the solar goes up easily and quickly and with as little problems as possible after the roofing probably makes a great deal of sense.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Noah, good luck with that. Thank you. Judith in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Judith.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 99-year-old bungalow with a front porch that was, I think the flooring was never replaced. It was covered with carpeting at some point in its history. And right now it's looking along the edge that's the most exposed. Looks like the wooden floorboards under the carpeting have started to deteriorate a bit. The floor itself doesn't feel spongy when you walk on it. I had one person look at it who suggested, just by looking at this little strip that I had uncovered by pulling the carpeting back, that I replace the entire floor with treated lumber. Now, I'm a reduce, reuse, recycle person, and I was thinking all I would need to do would be to patch the floor, you know, pull the carpeting off, patch that section of the floor, paint it nicely or stain it, and I'm done. Am I being unrealistic? Does it just make sense to replace the floor?
Well, you're being optimistic. The question is, what type of floor? Does this look like a tongue and groove floor where the boards are 2.5 to 3 inches wide? Yes. Okay, so what you probably have there, the reason that that lasted is that is probably vertical grain dug for old growth wood. Wonderful old stuff. You can build a ship out of it. The problem is at some point it does begin to deteriorate. I've got exactly the same thing going on in my house. The edges, you know, most 90% of it's good, but the edges aren't. The problem is even getting the material. It's a special order material, and you're not going to get old growth. You're going to get new growth. So I then suggest pre-finishing on all sides before you put it together. But you may find that patching is simply not going to work because it's tongue and groove. So it's not easy. You can do it. You can cut into it, and you can cut off the bottom part of the groove so that it sits on top, but you're losing some of the structural integrity. I would talk to a good historic restoration carpenter in that area. Again, if you if it's a historic house, it pays to put some money into it and do it right. I think if you do this correctly, you're probably going to get 40 years out of the new porch. I would not use treated lumber.
No.
There are too many problems with treated lumber. Treated lumber is inexpensive, new growth pine with a lot of space between the hard and the soft wood in it. It doesn't tend to last long. Now, I guess if you're going to put carpet over the whole thing, it might make sense, in which case you probably just use treated plywood. But depending upon what your house looks like, the aesthetics of it, you maybe have to do a little bit of thinking. So I would talk to a good carpenter / handyman who can discuss it with you and then make sure that when you're done, you've got something that you don't have to touch for the next 20 to 40 years and that you're happy with it.
Yeah. Good luck, Judah. Thank you. Dan in Lone Rock. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to respond to the comments about the solar and roofing and just give a recommendation for either a standing seam or hidden fastener type metal roof if you're thinking about solar. I mean, they're good for other reasons also, but there are standard types of solar racking available that just clamp to the rib between the roof panels, and so there's actually no penetrations in a metal roof except for, you know, wherever your electrical goes in, except so often that is coming through conduit around your fascia. It depends on what you get, but and then of course there's no screw holes in the roof either.
Yeah.
Yep, you're completely correct, Dan. I should have mentioned that as well. The problem with the standing seam metal roofs is for a lot of people is the expense. But again, you're probably going to be putting on a 50-year roof if you're putting money into a metal roof. So if you're going to stay there for a long time, it makes sense to make that sort of investment. Your solar is going to last 20 to 30 years, but then you can actually unclip everything, put new panels up on the same roof. So I think that is good advice.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary in Ashapan, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. I'm calling about a roofing question, too. And then I was contacted by this professional home restoration because they were doing, I'm working Oconomowoc. I know they're from Illinois, Belvedere, Illinois, and they do a lot of work. But he says, of course, I have hail damage on the roof. I know that the roof is 15 years old, and then I'm thought, well, I'm reading all the, then I started reading all the fine print on this form, and it says 5-year warranty on proper installation of roofing, 5-year warranty on proper insulation. Well, I'm not, they're not doing siding. Double lifetime warranty and so on. Lifetime warranty from roofing manufacturer. So do they then try to tell you what kind of shingles you have to use too then?
Well, I tell you.
I was interested in asphalt. The house was built in 1917, and I know the, you know, we had asphalt last time.
Tell you what, we're going to ponder that, Mary. You can stick around. John Freiberger is thinking, got his thinking cap on, and I've got sort of mine on too, but I'm leaning to John on this one. We need to take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back to answer Mary's question and yours as well. Join in at 800-642-1234. Talking about home improvement on the show today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. John Freiberger back with us. He owns Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg, with us every couple of months to address your home improvement concerns. Questions, the number is 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And John, as we broke for news, we had Mary from Ashapan, who needs a roof replaced on a 1917 home. I believe she was talking with a company out of Illinois, and there were a variety of warranties involved for the various parts. What are your thoughts?
Well, the first thing she needs to do is get a message to her insurance company that a roofer has come by and says that she has a claim, because she's going to have insurance coverage for this, hopefully, except maybe for a small deductible. When we get into warranties, things get complicated. There is a manufacturer's warranty, and those are usually pretty reliable. And you can look those up online. So like if you get a GAF shingle and it's a Timberline Ultra, whatever, you can look it up and it's going to say 30 years, 35 years, 40 years, 50 years, whatever. When we get to installers, generally, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I talk to a lot of lawyers. Generally in Wisconsin, whether people tell you you've only got a 1-year warranty or not, you really have a 5-year warranty from the time of the signing of the contract, because if you put the roof on wrong, it's a breach of the contract. So basically, yeah, it isn't a warranty, it's a breach of contract. And any smart roofer knows that, so they just say you got a 5-year warranty because you've got recourse for 5 years anyway. So that seems to work out. So if this is a reputable company, and I think I know which one she's talking about, then they do have a very large coverage area. But she needs to start with the insurance company and have the insurance company do an inspection to confirm or dispute what the roofer says, and then go from there, because she certainly does not want to pay for this roof herself.
Yeah, there you go, Mary. Thank you for calling. Bill in Oregon, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry, John. We're approaching our first ever roof replacement, and we've got an aging asphalt roof. We've got kind of a heavily shaded roof, a lot of trees. I mean, it gets sun on different parts. And then we've got two different sets of skylights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first, I just want to curious if you had any recommendations for material. It's currently asphalt for a roof that doesn't get consistent sun in any part of it, really. And also, how would I get started on finding people who know how to work with and around skylights?
Well, any good roofer is going to know how to work around skylights. The question is, how do you find a good roofer? And that can be a little bit difficult. Certainly, you've got to do the usual consumer research and see who has problems and who doesn't have problems. Basically, if they've got big ads, full-page ads in the Sunday paper, don't call them. The roofers that I know that are good are booked up 3 to 6 months in advance. And there are some very good people in Madison. There are companies around here who have been in business literally for 50 years. As far as material, you can reuse asphalt shingles, but you will find that there are some asphalt shingles that are designed for shaded roofs, and they actually have as part of their granules zinc or zinc oxide granules, which are a very mild, I guess you'd call it a herbicide.
Yeah.
My old wood shingled roof on my farmhouse, I have zinc strips set in about every 10 rows. And the idea of that zinc strip is that is going to stop the lichen from growing on my very expensive wood shingles. So do a little bit of research. I believe, again, I'm mentioning GAF a lot today, but I recall that GAF did have that type of shingle available, or talk to the roofers and get some advice from them.
And Chuck from Whitewater actually had sent us an email. He has moss buildup on his asphalt shingle roof and wonders if he should do anything about it, and what's the best way, you know, if he has to, what does he do?
That's a good question. I know a lot about it with wood roofs, having lived with it, and green off works on wood roofs. I don't know if green off works on asphalt roofs. I think we're going to have to do a little bit of online research, because there certainly are things that will kill moss and lichen on roofs. The question is that going to disturb a petroleum-based product? It's possible. I guess I would do a little research first, and then if you've got, say, CertainTeed shingles, I would call tech support at CertainTeed and say, look, I want to spray my roof with, you know, XYZ. Is that okay? And my guess is they're going to have an opinion for you.
Yeah, if you could put zinc strips up there.
Well, indeed you could, Larry. If you remember the old farmer houses, when you drive around Wisconsin, they always had this metal on top of the roof. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, they had wood shingles back then, and that metal was zinc-coated metal. And now it's all painted because it got rusty. But the idea was that that zinc decorative-looking thing up on the ridge was releasing a zinc chemical that was helping to keep that wood roof free of green plant growth.
Yeah, there you go. Amy in Madison, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, we recently built a new house. My husband, when he was talking with the builder, said what we hope is not to have a roof that leaks or a basement that leaks. And we have a full deck that's part of our roof over the living room, and they put on something called DuraDeck, which we have been extremely happy with. We can walk on it. We sit up on the deck because we have a beautiful view of Lake Monona and the Capitol, and we can sit up on the deck, walk on the deck. It cleans off. We just hose it down to clean it off, and it's been great. So it's called DuraDeck, DuraDeck.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And we've been really happy with it as something, you know, that when the guy who called about walking on his roof, that might be something he wants to look into.
Yeah, I recall that from some years ago. He was talking about an entire roof, and I think that the cost may be a little prohibitive, but maybe if he was doing a small area, something like that would work.
Yeah, why not? Amy, thank you. Appreciate the call. Al in Shawano, your turn. Hi, Al.
Yes, good morning. My question that I have is to look at the replacement of a fiberglass tub with surround, and then put in a walk-in shower. And we've seen a number of different companies that have put out their ads and so forth, seen quotes anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 for a one-day job. Okay, so what should we really be looking at in terms of price?
My guess is we're looking at very different products with that price range, Al. So this is going to be sort of a cost-to-value analysis?
Yes, that's the kind of thing we're looking at.
Yes, I have seen the sort of one-day install, and basically it's an acrylic or a fiberglass sort of module that they put in. And they seem to work, and they're relatively inexpensive. If you are looking at something like ceramic, you're not going to be dealing with a one-day, and you're not going to be dealing with $5,000. So I think, you know, it's sort of like car shopping. You know, you can look at a Yugo, you can look at a Toyota, you can look at a Cadillac. You're going to pay different amounts of money for very, very different creatures. So I'm afraid you're probably going to have to do a little bit of research on that. And the various companies probably have a lot of photos that they can show you. Be sure, to check their warranties. You want 5 years at least, even though you do a 5 years recourse. So it's a question I can't answer, other than to say, Al, you're going to have to do some research, but just make very sure of what you're buying before you write that deposit check.
Yeah. Relating to that, Amy emailed, she has a 1930s home with what appears to be an originally installed tub. Wonders if that tub could be reglazed.
Yes, they can be. I know at least there's a company in Madison that does it. And I think it's a little bit complicated. I think some of them are actually electrocoated. I think they electrify the tub, and then they use some sort of spray that works. So, again, I think we're going to have to do a little bit of researching. I have never done it to a tub. I have had a couple of clients that have, because some of these old 1930s tubs, especially like the ones that have the round corners or the three-sided, some of them are architectural artifacts, and you want to try to keep them. Maybe start with a large plumbing supply house where you live or near where you live and say, look, I want to preserve this tub. Who do you think I should talk to? Because they are going to know the various plumbers, and they may be able to suggest to you somebody who can refinish that nice little tub. But certainly something I encourage you to try to do.
Dale in Brookfield, it's your turn. Hi, Dale.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions on my new construction condo that I have concerns about. One is I have PEX supply lines that are going up through the basement ceiling to the master bath vanity above that are directly over the electrical breaker panel. And the second question is the hardy plank siding. From what I've read in the installation, they should be gently touching on the butt joints, but most of the ones that I can see, I can put at least a dime, if not a quarter, in between the butt joints. So any comments on both of those?
Oh, yes. Well, let's see. The PEX above the electrical. I guess we see old-fashioned copper and steel water pipes above electrical panels all the time, and I guess the hope is that something doesn't leak. I can't recall anything in the electrical code that is counter to that. I would think that you could call the village of Brookfield and call in the morning before he heads out of the office and talk to the electrical inspector and say, do you have any concerns? Is there anything in the code? The electrical inspector says, it's just fine. Don't worry about it, Dale. Then I think you can probably take that as gospel. The hardy siding expands and contracts. The installation instructions from James Hardy Company are available online. A lot of Hardy is 3/8-inch joints and sealed. Without having the instructions in front of me, I'm afraid I can't tell you whether this is a correct or incorrect installation. So I think download the information from Hardy and then take a look at it. And take a look at all of the Hardy installation. Basically, just read the directions and walk around and take a look at it. Now, it sounds like you own the inside and the outside of the condo, which is a little unusual. Maybe it's a townhouse sort of situation. So the question is whether this is your problem or whether it's an owner's association problem.
Yeah, something else to think about, Dale. Thank you for calling. Christina in Glenwood City, your turn. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I have a 13,500-foot square equestrian center that's heated and insulated. It's fully steel-lined with treated lumber running vertically. The stall barn is 12 feet high. The arena is 18 feet high. And due to a long-term eight-year medical illness, the facility was used for hay storage. Now we're ready to get it going again. It's very dirty with cobwebs. Is it safe to pressure wash the facility, or do you have cleaning advice?
Ooh, this is one where I would not advise pressure washing unless I could actually see it. And then the question is, who's pressure washing it? If it's steel panels and if the panel fasteners are sealed with the little rubber plasticky grommets that goes around the head of the screw, and usually it's a five-sided screw with a slot, one may be okay. I'm a little bit concerned with it, but pressure washing may work. I mean, the question is, are you going to have this done professionally, or are you going to try to do it yourself? And you're also going to have all this water to get rid of. Now, maybe it's a really dry sand interior. That water is going to work its way into the sand, and you can use your, you know, you can use your rotary groomer or whatever you're using for a groomer in there to spread it out. But that is sort of a difficult one. If you're talking to a professional or thinking about having a professional, I would talk to that professional and see what they're comfortable putting water on.
Yeah. Something to think about, Christina. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Alan in Barneveld, on to you now. Hi, Alan.
Hi, thank you. I have a house with T111 siding, 4 inches on center, and there's a lot of areas that have kind of decayed, and I need to replace those areas. I'm having trouble finding good T11 siding that's 4 inches on center. One place I went to suggested that they have some 8-inch on center that they could cut grooves into and make into 4-inch on center, but I didn't know if that was a good solution or not.
Well, it may be the only solution you have. The what you're going to want to do if they do cut grooves into it is you're going to want to try to seal this with a really good quality. I'm assuming this is stain, not paint that is on there currently, Alan?
Right.
Yeah, I think that it is possible. Obviously, if they've got a really good saw jig setup, they could indeed run these panels through for you. T111 has a limited life. I assume what you're trying to do is basically get another decade or so out of what is still good by replacing what's there. So I'm sort of assuming that the new 4-inch that you're putting in, Alan, is maybe going to be good for a decade. And at that point, you're probably looking at simply replacing all of the siding on the house. Make sense?
Would they, if they cut the groove in the 8-inch on center, would it line up exactly with the T11 I have now?
Well, I don't know. What you're going to have to do is take very exact measurements and give that to them, and then again, maybe not. I don't know exactly how yours are, how it's currently arranged, and you may find if the 8-inch spacing doesn't align with the double four, that it won't. And sometimes you get as close as you can, and you sort of hope that no one really notices.
Alan, thank you. Good luck. Appreciate it. Well, James in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, James.
Hi there. Got a 1950s house on the west side, kind of a Cape Cod. Bugs, cedar siding, bugs, birds, everything's deteriorating. I see there's no insulation really left in the walls between the sheathing. We've called 3 reputable companies. The big question or argument before, you know, we'll have it insulated when they do the tear off is vinyl or LP smart. If you talk to a real estate agent these days, they say don't do vinyl. You increase your value by going LP smart. The salesmen want to push vinyl because it's easier and probably faster to install and cheaper for them. I don't know. You got an opinion?
Well, it's really an aesthetic choice. I don't like vinyl because vinyl is vinyl. The thing is, it is inexpensive, and if it is installed correctly with a good weather-resistant barrier behind it, and that's the really important thing. Vinyl siding is a rain screen. I mean, rain goes through it. It screens the rain, but it doesn't keep the rain out. So our weather-resistant barrier has to really be of good quality, or we're going to end up wetting these walls. Certainly, both the Hardy Board siding and the LP Smart Side are products that give you a good bit more on aesthetics. Generally, when they are installed in Madison, they are installed wrong. So as we always say, you want to go to James Hardy and you want to go to Louisiana Pacific and you want to download two things from LP. One is the Smart Side installation and the other is the Smart Side trim, because I have yet to go to a house with the Smart Side trim correctly installed. I would certainly, correctly installed, I think you're going to have a superior product with either Hardy or with LP compared to vinyl. The question is cost-benefit analysis. What is it? What is worth to you? But go ahead and get the prices on all three, and then you're just going to have to decide what you are the most comfortable with, and then plan out your insulation of the wall. Do you want to put foam on the exterior so that you're putting maybe R11 in or R13 in the walls, and then putting maybe Thermax, 3/4 inch, 1/2 inch, or 1 inch Thermax on the outside? What is your payback going to be on this drafty house? Cape Cods are murder to insulate, because they go all over. So I think you really want to think about a whole plan there. Make sure you know what you're doing for insulation in the interstitial space and on the exterior. How are you wind wrapping this? While you're doing that, you probably want to go upstairs in this Cape Cod, and you've got this downstairs ceiling plus the knee walls. So look at the whole thing as a system if you have to hire a consultant.
There you go. Thanks, James. Appreciate the call. Kay in McQuantico wonders, what do you recommend for floor? What kind of floor tile do you recommend for a small laundry room? It would replace an existing 25-year-old linoleum floor. She doesn't want anything exorbitant in style or price.
Yeah.
The hallway leading to the laundry is wood flooring.
Yeah, well, it's a linoleum now, so it's different. You know, LVT, luxury vinyl tile, when bought from a flooring store, not from a big box, is some pretty amazing stuff. Snapped together, good quality, dozens and dozens, hundreds indeed, of different styles. And I think you're going to find an LVT that'll work and perhaps can go right over the top of what you have there now.
Yeah.
Which is going to save a lot of money and give you a nice-looking product.
There you go, Kay. And, John, here we are out of time. Thanks again. You'll be back in 2 months, and we'll do this all over again. Appreciate it very much.
I look forward to it.
John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, and by way of full disclosure, we should mention that Freiberger Consulting is one of WPR's many business sponsors, so that's great as well. John will be back in 2 months. We'll do it all over again. Tomorrow's Garden Talk time, and whether you're wishing for colder weather or embracing the summer heat, it's time to start preparing for the change of seasons. And we'll learn how to get your ornamental garden ready for fall and winter. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.